This is the Feminine Podcast, the official podcast of Feminine, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminine, and today we're bringing you our next fantastic Fix 17 talk. This talk is brought to you by Marina Del Rios. She's the Health Disparities Research Director in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And in her Fix 17 talk, which is called Advocacy and Engagement, Emergency Physicians as Community Activists, she discusses how our role as emergency physicians in the ED, which is the port of entry into the healthcare system for our most disenfranchised populations, how this role sets us up perfectly to take on advocacy roles within our communities and how valuable and enriching this can be for your career. Take a listen.
Spend a few hours in any emergency department, and it will become clear that this is where medicine and society collide. Every day we witness how race, gender, social class, identity, illness, ethnicity, and policy converge. And unfortunately, several of us have already talked about this, right? Burnout is very common in our specialty, in part a result of our sense of disempowerment as we witness the burden of social determinants of health. Advances in science and technology have allowed us to afford resource-intensive clinical care and critical care. Yet the success of our interventions is entirely dependent on what happened to the patient before they even came through our doors. In the case of cardiac arrest, for example, which is what I do research on, the first, and I would argue most important, link in the chain of survival is the public. And if there's any hesitation in bystanders calling 911, whether for fear of legal repercussions or perhaps they're afraid that they might get deported, or if there was no CPR initiated at the scene, whether because of lack of knowledge on how to perform it or maybe some misconceptions about risk, then there's very little that we can do as emergency physicians and in our specialties to take care of that patient to ensure that they're going to survive. The marked disparities in cardiac arrest survival rates very closely mirror the disparities in society. Marked geographic disparities are all over the literature, right? We've seen a lot of reports coming out describing how some cities do this really well and other cities don't do it so well. The sort of standard that people in cardiac arrest follow is Seattle, right? We always quote the Seattle survival rates of 20% overall, and for Utstein survival rates, even higher. In the city of Chicago, traditionally, it's been cited as a 2% survival rate. And so in 2011, a collaborative of emergency medicine leaders from multiple institutions all over the city and the state of Illinois came together with a plan to take over cardiac arrest care. We had one goal, to ensure that every person who suffered a cardiac arrest, regardless of where they came from, had state-of-the-art care at the scene, en route to, and in the hospital. And yes, a lot of our conversations were along the lines of science and technology and ensuring that we're doing the latest in evidence-based medicine for pre-hospital and hospital care. But we also recognized very early on that none of that was going to matter if we couldn't get more patients through our doors. This is Chicago when we first started Illinois Heart Rescue. The very dark area, gray areas in the city are some of our most disadvantaged communities. So low income, very limited resources to healthcare, a lot of vacant housing. The red dots are where cardiac arrests were occurring in the city. And the yellow dots are where bystander CPR was being performed. Notice the disparities in bystander CPR rates. So we went with good intentions, a little naivete, and a lot of grandiose ideas to those communities with the idea to try to rally the troops and get as many people to perform bystander CPR. And we had all these lofty goals of we're just gonna train everyone in the community and they're just gonna learn it and everything is gonna be better. But see, I'm an academic, as I know a lot of you in this room are, and we have a terrible reputation in some of these most disenfranchised communities because we do this all the time, right? We get our grant funding. We get the grant funding without even asking what the priorities for the community are. And then we just want to impose our ideas and don't give them a lot of room to discuss what they know how to do, what existing assets are there in their communities, how can we fold this into ongoing initiatives, and most importantly, how can we make these things sustainable? Grant funding runs out, and we just rush out. And this is where it's very important to point out and distinguish the difference between outreach and engagement. As one community leader once told me, we don't necessarily need you to bring more resources into our community. We'll figure it out. We will mobilize and we will identify resources if you convince us that this is a priority. And so a lot of our initial work was admitting that we are not the experts and we let the community lead the way. Okay, well, tell me what you're doing right now. How does this complement ongoing initiatives? Who are the main stakeholders that we need to identify? Where can we turn for dissemination? How do we strengthen existing assets? And most importantly, how can we make this sustainable? And so soon we had survivors and families of non-survivors leading the way in the push for legislation in the state of Illinois to require CPR training in high schools. That became a law 2 years ago. We also partnered with community organizations when we recognized that part of the reason why people are not performing CPR is because there's a lot of misconceptions, and the literature that's out there is not approachable. It's not easily understandable by many of these communities. They're not culturally appropriate, and they're not in the right language. So we worked together to create materials that were culturally appropriate, multilingual. And we also partnered with organizations to leverage their own assets, to find sources of funding, to find items that would help their own communities so that when Illinois Heart Rescue disappears, if it does disappear, that this is a sustainable program that will stay in their community. And what we're witnessing is really a remarkable change. I stand here as a proud Chicagoan, asking from you that you stop citing 2% survival rate in my city. No, we're not quite Seattle yet, but we stand proudly at 10% survival rates. And what is most important, thank you. You didn't even give me the chance to tell you what the real numbers are. So Chicago has about 2,000 cardiac arrests per year. So when we first started, survival rates were about only 40 patients. And now we're talking about 200 patients that are coming back to their families, to their communities, to become, again, members of society. And what is most important is please notice the yellow dots on those deep gray areas. Now, this is just one of multiple initiatives that are being led by emergency physicians all over the United States and all over the world. Kavi is a good example of that, too. We are leaders, and we can lead the way to health justice. In Chicago, there's a lot of other initiatives that I've been blessed to be a part of. There's a community engagement for early recognition and immediate action in stroke. We also have screening programs led by emergency physicians and in partnership with faith-based organizations so that we can identify hypertension earlier in the community and we can get people into primary care. We are improving the health of our homeless population by providing them with safe and stable housing. And one of the programs that I'm most proud of is our Champions Network. It's a high school training academy for frontline health advocates. These are youth from some of the most impoverished neighborhoods. These are not our straight A students. These are our students that have some challenges in their high schools. They're coming to our hospital, learning how to become community health workers, and in the process, strengthening the health career pipeline. Now, I don't think anyone in this room would argue with this statement. Clearly, emergency medicine is providing a valuable service that most patients can't get anywhere else. But what I would argue is that we should also feel empowered in knowing that our service can extend beyond the clinical encounters. by expanding our role from individual diagnosis and treatment and advocating for one patient at a time. We can lead the way in the development of systematic interventions to address social determinants of health and to promote health justice. We can affect change outside of the walls of our ED silos.